This week's show with Ann Brook of Handmade by Ann is sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery and the Embroiderers Guild of America. If you've ever done remodeling, especially on an historic structure, you understand fully what Kim and company are dealing with as they work to open their new store in the Baird House. According to a recent report from Kim, they are just about done clearing hurdles, and the shop opening is on the horizon. Join the Sassy Jack's Facebook page to get the latest information. In the meantime, be sure to check out sassyjackstitchery.com for a broad selection of charts, including the full collection of sassafras samplers. While you're there, join the Cosmos Thread Club. It's a great way to build up a stash of beautiful cotton floss. If your significant other is wondering what to buy you for your birthday, Valentine's Day, or any other holiday, they can't go wrong with a Sassy Jack's gift certificate. Make Sassy Jack's Stitchery your local needlework store by visiting the website at sassyjackstitchery.com. Also sponsoring this week's show is the Embroiderers Guild of America at egausa.org. One of the more exciting developments for 2023 is expanded access to the popular virtual lecture series. The cost to participate is a very reasonable $5, and there is now plenty of room for all interested stitchers. Register now for the January 28 lecture, Quaker Schoolgirl Needlework in 17th Century London by Isabella Rossner. And don't miss the February 11 presentation by Leslie Rinchen Wangmo, who has been a Fiber Talk guest. Her lecture, A Journey into Tibet's Sacred Textile Art, will be terrific. Join the EGA now so you'll have access to these lectures and so many other activities and events that will enhance your needlework experience. Also, mark your calendars so you remember to register for the 2023 EGA National Seminar, September 1 through 5 in Boston. Registration opens March 11 at noon Eastern. Thanks to Sassy Jacks and the EGA for sponsoring this week's show. And now let's enjoy our conversation with the extremely talented Ann Brook. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from England, Handmade by Ann. Ann Brook, welcome, Ann.
Hi, thanks ever so much for inviting me. It's exciting.
Oh, this is fun. I love the way you worked your name into Handmade. Well played.
Yeah. Yeah, you would be surprised how many people don't believe my name is Anne. I was doing a textile show when I first started working, and a gentleman just thought I was being clever, and I actually had to get my driver's license out to show him that I was actually called Anne. But there you go.
Yeah. All right, so for me, in the research of you, the picture of you sitting in the lawn chair, legs folded with a big old hoop of embroidery outside, just said it all. That was, you must include that picture when you send the photos. That, to me, that was just bliss right there. You just, the sun's shining and you're sitting there outside stitching.
Yeah, it's favorite thing. You usually find me stitching anywhere. That's sat outside my shed, which is my studio next door to the house. It was actually done for one of my students at school was doing a, she'd done a project where she'd done all these beautiful portraits and everybody in the department wanted her to do one of them. So I had that picture taken and she's done a digital painting of it for me that I have at work.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Yeah. And that was the other thing I want to talk about. Shed, was it shed 76 and a half?
Yeah.
That looks like, so that's right next to your house then, because I couldn't tell if that was a storefront downtown or what that was.
No, it's right next to my house. So when we actually moved here, my studio originally was in the roof of the house. So the house had been converted and I had an attic room. And then when I started running workshops, there wasn't really enough room for everybody to be in there. If you stood up, you were fine if you were sat down, but you couldn't when you stood up. And we did look for different facilities actually in Brig House to see if I could get somewhere to run them from. And then my hubby decided to build me a big shed studio next to the house. So it's called 76 and a half because I live at 76 and it's next door. So it's 76 and a half. That's where the name comes from. But yeah, that's where my workshop is that I run my workshops from.
Whoa.
It's great.
You win.
Yes. Yes.
It's amazing. I call it a shed, but everybody, when they come, they just say it's not a shed. It is a shed because it's wooden built, and it's a temporary structure, but it's not going anywhere. It's staying there for good.
Wow, that must have been fun to design that too, so you get it just right.
Yeah, well, it's a triangular shape one. So he's not a builder. I will just put that out there. He works for a college. He's an IT data manager. I still don't really know. I've known him like since I was 16. I still really don't know what he does as a job. he does something to do with computers and numbers and things like this. But his hobby is DIY. He loves DIY. So he spent a full year designing it all. And then it took us, well, because we had to have the land dug out next to the house. I think it took us, maybe a year to build. So I was his helper. I'm surprised we didn't get divorced. he built it all himself and taught himself plastering and plumbing. The only thing we had done were the electrics. But yeah. He did everything. And it's a fantastic space. I'm very lucky.
Oh, yeah, it looks like a great space just to be in, let alone teach classes and do needlework. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very tranquil because we're sort of where I am in Brigg House. We're in the small town, but where the house is, it's sort of set down off the road and we're surrounded by trees. So in summer, when all the trees are in leaf, you wouldn't know that we were anywhere else. It's just absolutely heaven.
And so nice, I'm sure, to have the needlework in its own space and you can go to it or go away from it. That's got to be a plus.
It is. I mean, it's all set up for workshops. So next door in the shed, that's tidy. It's beautifully organised and it's tidy. I'm actually talking to you from my sewing room in the house, which really isn't tidy and isn't organised. It's my heaven. For me, it's organised. But when my hubby comes in, he'll say, you've got this room and you just sat working on this small bit in front of your desk and you're just surrounded by stuff. And it's like, yeah, but it's my stuff and it's just yummy. So I'm very lucky that I do have actually two spaces that I work in. Well, I say two. I have the whole house as well because I have a little bit next to the chair in the living room and there'll be some of my stuff in the kitchen and some in our bedroom. So it's everywhere. It just goes everywhere.
That's right. And what's the problem with that, you know?
No problem at all. Absolutely no problem.
Because we need the space to do our thing.
Yeah, and I do it most of the time. If you speak to any of my friends, it's very rare you see me without any stitching, so I've got it with me all the time.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Full immersion.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, and we were talking beforehand that your husband's a cyclist, so he really can't say too much because I know all about that bike stuff, and I have a whole room for that stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has his garage.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not in the house,
up,
it's in the garage.
Like yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't go in the garage, so he can do what he wants in there. That's fine.
Stay away.
Yeah, totally.
So how did you get, how did needlework start for you?
Well, blimey. It's not actually something that I've done since I was little at all, really. Sewing really wasn't part of my life. The only bits of sewing, I suppose, was my mum used to make my clothes when I was younger, so she did dressmaking. But my mum was, I know a lot of people talk about how they had stitching passed down from their grandma and their mum and stuff like that. I didn't really have that. I suppose the bit that I had from my mum was being creative and just doing things. She was a painter and I went down an art route to start off with. So sewing and textiles and stuff really didn't feature until I actually became a qualified teacher. So I went down an art route to start off with. And then when I qualified and got my first job, I met a teacher who was textile trained and we started going on workshops together, which became one of probably the most dangerous things I've ever done in my life because I got slightly addicted to going on them. And I'd go on workshops. And so the very first ones that I did was when wet felting first came in. So we came home from that and went and bought merino wools. And we just felt making. We didn't really know what we were doing. We were just having a lovely ball felt making. And when I got married and moved to Leeds, I found a little workshop that was called Variegations in a lovely place called Sorby Bridge. And I started going on lots of workshops. So I'd go on a workshop, think it was what I was doing, come home, buy the kit, buy the books, start a project, maybe get 2 or 3 months down the line, get bored, stick it in a box, and go on another workshop. So that's how it sort of started, really.
Oh, you're a kindred spirit.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I mean, Robert, I'm surprised Robert and I did stay married at that point, because there were more and more boxes appearing in the house. Because I'm an art teacher, and at the time at school, we were looking at extending into art textiles. So I was going to work with one of the textile teachers, and I didn't really want to teach something that I didn't know a lot about. So I did a distance learning, City and Guilds in Embroidery. And did that in my spare time to learn about stitching and learn about traditional things, but also the design side and how to create projects and put things together, which I sort of knew from my own teaching anyway, but doing it more textiles than art based.
So you still teach?
Yeah, oh, that's a whole other story. When I was doing the distance learning, I was the head of the department, so I was the head of art, full time teaching. While I was doing that, I had 2 children, and I think this is where maybe my friends say that I'm ridiculously organised, but I don't actually know anything different. I just know how to pigeonhole different bits of my life. So I started stitching and doing more of that in my own time, and this whole handmade thing is totally accidental. It was never the intention. I didn't think, oh, do you know what? I'm going to stitch and I'm going to build a business and things from that. It actually all happened because I was invited to take part. We have an art exhibition that started, I think it was 2021 when it probably started. No, 2011 when it started. And I was asked to put some work in. One of the guys that was running it was asking a lot of the art teachers if we'd submit some work. So I actually submitted some of my textile work that I'd been doing, and it got accepted, and I won an award, and I sold the work. And it was like, oh, okay, this wasn't really a thing. Robert, on the other hand, was like, oh, she can actually sell some of the stuff we've got in our house, rather than it just taking up more and more and more room. So he convinced me to enter a thing. We have a thing called Art in the Pen. So it's based in Skipton, which is in North Yorkshire. And the location is actually the auction mart for animals. So it's where the farmers go to sell the cows and the sheep and the pigs. So it's a massive shed that's got all these metal pens in. And what they do for the weekend is, if you get in, you get given one of the pens and you turn it into a mini art gallery. And then people come and visit and buy work. So I applied, didn't thinking I was going to get in. And I got in, which was brilliant. But then on the other hand, I'd got no work at all. So I had about 4 months to get a collection of work together, which was insane, because the kids were little. I was working and it was exam time at school. So it was a bit crazy, but I managed it and I got enough work to do my little pen. And while I was at the show, there were 2 ladies that came to chat to me, and they spoke to me probably for about half an hour and then just said, oh, can you come and give us a talk? And I don't think my brain was working that day, and I didn't understand what they were talking about. And I said, what do you mean a talk? And they were actually part of the Embroiderers Guild in Harrogate, which the Embroiderers Guild, unfortunately, doesn't exist like it used to do. But back then there were lots of little groups of ladies that like stitching that met together. And they asked me if I'd go and do a talk, and I didn't know what they were talking about. And basically they just said, well, what you've done for half an hour, make it last an hour and we'd love it. And then if you could run a workshop, that would be great too. I was like, well, what do you want me to teach you? And they said, well, you're a teacher, aren't you? And I was like, yep, I teach kids at school. They said, well, can you come and teach us? And that's actually where it all started. So my original work was stitched paper collage. So I based my work on going for walks, taking pictures of plants and flowers, coming back into my studio, usually getting a map of where I'd done the walk, using upcycled papers and things, and then drawing on the top of it with a sewing machine. And that's where it all started. And it just snowballed from there.
come give a talk. We just
yeah. And I was just
that.
Like, what do you want me to talk about? And they said, well, what you've just said, and just make it a bit longer.
So,
wow.
Yeah, it was all an accident. This was never the plan that this is what I was going to do at all. So I feel very lucky that it just started snowballing from there. So I ended up exhibiting work. I went to a few different shows. And the Embroiderers Guild was fantastic at that point because different groups heard about me. So I started doing more talks and workshops and things like that, and then started running them from my studio here as well.
So do you sit down with your husband at one point and say, look, we need to make this a formal business, or did it just keep evolving and then pretty soon you had a business on your hands?
Yeah, it was never the intention at
never had
all.
That meeting at the kitchen table then, huh?
No, it just stuck in there. It was quite cool. It just stuck in there, and then Robert was like, oh, okay. So running the workshops and stuff, I just loved doing that because that was like sharing what I was doing. And I've always, because being a teacher, I've only ever wanted to be a teacher from being about 4 years old. I just love sharing things that I know with other people.
Yeah.
So it really grew from there. So I ended up doing loads of different shows just round here, and I've given talks and workshops all over the UK, gone to Ireland and done some there, and then there were a few different companies in the UK that also run workshops, so I went and I was a guest tutor there as well. So it just slowly just built up, and then it got to a stage where I was finding it quite difficult to manage working full time and doing this full time. So I dropped a day at work, so I had one day a week where I could really focus on what I was doing, and that really helped me just get my head round, right, this is actually a business and you need to run it because you'd like to do this eventually instead of teaching. So you need to put like your serious head on and actually come up with a plan.
Yeah. Yeah, because you do at some point, you have to formalize it, and sooner or later, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that was interesting. That's the bit, I think, then, that it becomes quite tricky because you've got to spend time doing, I always call them the boring bits, the bits that are behind the scenes, and it's not the sitting and stitching bit. So it was just balancing that and just making sure that I was building that side of it up as well, because it does take quite a long time to do all that stuff.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's so interesting to hear you describe that, because I'm a former teacher, and Beth homeschooled her kids, so that makes her a teacher by far.
Yep.
I still don't know how you quite pulled that off, Beth, but applause to you. But then I've been a magazine editor for 40-some years, and to me, that's just a form of teaching. It's just a different audience and different medium. And then this podcast is really another form of teaching, you know, just sharing information. And so to hear you do that and say how much fun it is, you know, I think we both relate to it is a great fun. It's rewarding in its own right just to be able to share information and help people expand their horizons.
Oh, massively. I mean, I find that doing that, I get so much back myself from people, because I think one of the things that I've realized doing workshops, and it amazes me every time I do a workshop, is when you introduce it and you show your examples of the work and you do the same demonstration to everybody that's in the room, yet all the work that comes back is so individual to that person. I just love it. I absolutely love it.
When I first found you on Instagram, I think it was the 52 tags came up on my feed. And then to see how everyone was interpreting those. And was that in 2020 when that came out? I was trying to look back and find that.
Yeah, that's another total accident. Everything in my life is an accident. Nothing is planned, ever. So what actually happened was, in 2019, I went and did a trade fair in the UK because I'd been selling my work myself. And I decided to have a look, see whether any galleries or shops would be interested in selling my work. So I did my first trade show, which was really good. And I got about 10 different galleries across the UK that started stocking my work. But I just found that year that I actually lost my stitching mojo, because all the pieces of work that I ever made to sell were all individual. I never replicate anything because there's a story behind everything. And I found doing the trade show that people were like saying, oh, we'd like 3 green ones, 2 yellow ones, 3 blue ones. And I just spent the whole of 2019 just making all the orders that had come in, which on the one hand was brilliant, but on the other hand, I sort of lost myself. I didn't really know what I was doing anymore because I just felt like I wasn't developing myself as an artist. So I decided that when it got to 2020, I needed a little bit of a break. So this is when Sewing for the Soul came about, which was on a Sunday evening. I'm assuming most people possibly feel this, but I know especially as a teacher, on a Sunday evening, I used to get quite stressed about work that week and all the different things I've got to think about, am I planning and worrying about the kids and are they going to get the grades?
And I remember those Sunday nights. I grew to hate Sunday night. Oh, yes.
Yeah. It was just, and I just thought, I need something to take my mind off. So for me, that is stitching. So I decided, right, I was going to get myself a little kit and I was going to film myself doing this bobbin and I was going to do just really simple, put fabric on, sit and stitch, film what I've done, and I would set myself a challenge each month. And that's how I just set off doing that. And that was when we got up to Easter and we'd been hearing about this idea about school closing, that there was an illness flying around and school might need to close. And I can remember in the department, because it was coming up to exam time for us, and we were like, oh my goodness, are the exams going to happen? Aren't they going to happen? And we just thought, oh, we're going to be closed for 2 weeks. We'll have the 2 weeks of the Easter holidays and then we'll be back at work and it'll be fine. Whatever it was that was making everybody poorly will have gone. Well, obviously that didn't happen. So because I was then working at home and doing online teaching, which wasn't taking up all my day because I'd set the work, the kids would do it. And I kept having these bits. I kept stitching a little bit more. And obviously while people were at home, people started to find my project and started stitching along. And it was meant to take me a full year to do the project. And I actually finished it 6 months in because my piece of work is nearly 2 meters long. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I can't do another 2 meters on this. It's huge. So we were in that was the summer. And I'd sort of gone back to work a little bit because we'd gone back for our exam groups, but we were still working at home. So I've always loved textile books. I've been in loads of different workshops where you've made fabric books. So I decided to do a fabric book. So I started doing a fabric book, was filming that as well. And it was when we had a lovely summer in the UK. So I was sat stitching in the garden and more and more people were stitching. And I finished the book and thought we were going to be going back to work. And then we went into another little mini lockdown up to Christmas. So then I did a mini piece of work, which is the 12 pages of Christmas, which were tiny little bits of work. And I really, really enjoyed doing that. So I thought, right, I've quite enjoyed doing this. People are stitching along. This is quite nice. Maybe they'd like to do some little bits of stitching next year because I'll be back at work and I won't have time to do anything big. So something little each week would be lovely. And I'd done a project while I was doing my City and Guilds where it was all presented on tags. And I thought, oh, let's do 52 tags. I can do one a week. So that's how that all came about. And when I started it, in my head, I was like, blimey, if I end up doing 52 of these, it'll be a miracle. I'll get bored at some point during the year. But didn't realise how many people were going to start doing it. So we went back to work. And I think by the time I'd got to the second tag, we went into the big lockdown where we were just at home for the majority of the rest of the school year. So it was just great, just stitching these tags and more people started joining in, which was fantastic.
Yeah, I remember I just loved seeing them on my feed because that you gave a theme, correct?
Yeah.
You'd say,
yeah.
And so people would interpret that theme, whatever it was. And I can't remember, was it a stitch?
Every 4 weeks we did a stitch, but the bits in between, oh, I was just making things up as I was going along. So it might have been a colour or something I'd seen, or it could have been absolutely anything. But one of the things that I did love doing it is because obviously we were in lockdown, you had to use your own stuff because you couldn't go shopping. And I know I've spoken to lots of people. It's like I used to have a drawer that had fat quarters in it. Robert still doesn't understand the fat quarter thing. He thinks it's ridiculous. But I had all these beautiful fabrics, all colour coordinated. Now, I'm not a quilter or anything like that. And I don't even know why I was buying them. They were just really pretty bits of fabric. And I just
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, just heaven. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, do you know what? This is ridiculous because I've got so many things that I've got that I'm keeping. I don't know what I'm keeping them for. And I think that's one of the biggest things for me that's come out the past few years is use it. Just use the stuff because otherwise it's just going to get donated to somebody else because they won't know what it is. And it was great just using up things. I think in one of the videos, I do have a bit of a heart-stopping moment when I do actually cut into a fat quarter. And it's like, oh, I can't believe I've just cut into that. Oh, no, that's crazy. But it's great. I just absolutely love doing it. And when we got to week 26, halfway through the year, I decided that it'd be quite nice to find out where people were stitching. So I asked everybody if they fancied making a tag and sending it me and putting on where they were from on the back. And I bought myself a map that went in my shed so that I could put pins on it as to where everybody was coming from. And I thought I might get maybe 60 or 70 of these tags. The first postal delivery that I had after I'd asked everybody, I'd got 40 envelopes in. from all over the UK, and I ended up sat outside with my daughter Harriet. She was helping me open them all, and I ended up in tears because people had sent me letters about how they'd come across the tags, how it was helping them. Some people had lost family members, so they were making memory tags. Wow. And it was just absolutely mind-blowing. I ended up having to get a separate box for the postman to put them all in because he couldn't get them through the letterbox.
Oh, wow.
It went worldwide. So there were people in Canada, America, South America, the whole of the UK, Europe, Australia, New Zealand. There were a couple came from India. I know there were a couple of ladies in Russia that were doing it as well. And I displayed them in my shed, and I had to go and buy new display boards because I ended up with 700 tags.
Holy smokes.
Oh, wow. It was insane. Absolutely insane. And because the project is still on my YouTube channel, and every so often people must get to week 26 and I get a tag through the post, even now.
It was just a great idea. It just, to me, I didn't do the tags, but it was just so inspiring to see all the different ways people interpreted the prompts. It was just wonderful.
Yeah. I did say every now and again that I was annoyed that I was the one that did the first one, because when you saw what other people did, you were just like, oh, that's such a good idea. Why didn't I think of that? There were some absolutely outstanding ones. It's just unbelievable. Right. And I know that I've since we've been allowed to get out and about, and I've gone and done a few talks to groups and things since, I know there's quite a few people have won prizes and awards with their tags because they've entered them into competitions and shows and things. So that's just fantastic.
Wow. What a story. Especially at a time when everyone's isolated, just a way to connect with people. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I heard stories of family members that weren't anywhere near each other. So they'd do a Zoom and they'd all watch the video and then they'd all stitch on Zoom. So they'd make their tags. So it felt like that they were all together and all stitching together. And it really got me through lockdown as well, because we made it to 52. We did actually do 52. I didn't give up because I knew that everybody was stitching. It kept me going. So it was like, I loved it, thinking up the next idea for the following week's tag and what could we do? And oh, yeah, it was just brilliant. I absolutely loved it. It really kept me sane for a whole year.
That's so cool.
Yeah, we've heard a lot of stories about people that stitching has, you know, kept them sane during all that lockdown period. And
Because I heard from people saying that they'd lost their own stitching mojo. They couldn't think of what they wanted to do. So just having a little prompt on a Friday, and because you could get most of them done within half an hour or so, but if people wanted to spend more time on them, they could do. One of my friends here in the UK, she ended up doing two sets of tags. So she did one in all her favourite colours, and then she did one that was just a monochrome version. So she doubled up what she was doing, but they're unbelievable. And the way that people presented them as well, once they'd finished, it's just been fantastic.
That was a great idea. Great idea. They just kind of showed up.
Yeah, it did. Another accident. Totally.
Okay, and now you're doing something called Tag Roulette.
Oh, Tag Roulette. So the tags are all on YouTube. And as I was getting towards the end of the year, because all the projects that I'd done were all free on YouTube, one of my friends pointed out to me that I was trying to leave teaching and this was actually my job and I couldn't just keep doing things for free. So I ended up doing, I have a Ko-fi page that people can pay and subscribe. So there's the flags and the stitching hour that's been on there. But there were people that had followed me on YouTube that just said, totally understandably, well, they didn't want to subscribe and pay for things and things like that. And I felt like, oh, I still felt like I needed to do something for everybody that had followed me. So I came up with the idea of Tag Roulette. So that was a monthly thing where I did a number generator. So it generated three numbers and we had to look at the three tags that were created on those 3 weeks and then combine them into a piece. So the piece of work has got 36 of the tags all combined together. So I think the last video comes out this week, possibly. And it was just a game that, again, just came out of it. And I've actually ended up now, I'm being asked to do a Tag Roulette workshop next year where people can come and just generate three numbers and put three techniques together. And it's ended up becoming quite a nice way of working. So if you've got that sort of mental block for stitching and you did do the tags, you can just generate some numbers and look at the three techniques and just put them together and just come up with something totally new.
Again, a great idea. You know, we run into people all the time who've said, you know, oh, you know, I'm tired of stitching. You know, I've done that. I don't know what else to do. But you take three stitches, you know, or, you know, you take a bunch of stitches, you know, put them in a jar and you pull three out randomly. Yeah. Would be, you know, if you haven't done the tags.
Yeah.
And just say, okay, I'm going to make something with these three stitches.
Yeah, if you haven't done the tags or anything like that, you can still do the same thing. So if you've got a hand stitching book and it's got 60 pages in it, just pull out three numbers and go to the three pages and look at the three stitches and just see how you can start combining them. Because when I've done any of my videos, I'm not Royal School of Needlework trained and I'm not somebody that's done a degree in stitching or anything like that. I just love stitching. And I think once you've learned to stitch, I like to break the rules and play around with that stitch because it becomes more fun to me, and trying just different types of threads. And basically, if it'll go through a needle and I can stitch with it, I'll stitch with it and see what happens. And it's losing that fear of going wrong. You can't go wrong at all. The only way, I always say this to people on my workshop, there's two rules that I have on a workshop. The first one is if you've gone wrong, keep quiet. Do not tell anybody because they don't know that you've gone wrong. And the other rule is that if somebody pays you a compliment and says it's nice, you smile and say thank you and then just feel all warm and fuzzy inside that somebody else really appreciated and liked what you'd been doing.
Yep. Yeah, that's what they tell jazz musicians. If you make a mistake, repeat it, and then people will think it's part of the deal. Yep.
Yeah, totally. And I think we've grown up in a society where you just think everything has to be right and spot on and perfect. And in textiles, in art anyway, I don't think it does. It's an expression of who you are. So who's to say that you've gone wrong? Nobody. You just keep quiet. You just don't tell anybody. Or you cover it up with a button.
Another great idea.
I was intrigued. You know, hearing you talk now, I'm getting a better picture because I really saw in your work two channels where you have the nature designs and the kits and hoops and all of that. And then you have this whole other channel of your work that is more freeform embroidery covered up with a button, that kind of thing. To me, there's two very different channels. And now I see how you get to that point. You'll try anything.
Yes. I still love going on workshops. I still go on workshops. It's my guilty pleasure because I just want to learn all the time. What can I learn? What's new? What can I see that's different? and just see how I can interpret that in my own way, really, and just put my own spin on it. But yeah, I suppose there are two. I suppose the hand stitching and the free form thing, that's definitely just come out of the lockdowns and the pandemic. I mean, I've always loved hand stitching, which is where all the hoops and everything like that and the kits come from, because that's just sharing that love of stitch. But I think the free form and the other bit is probably what's closest to my heart. That's the bit that I love, because there's just no rules.
The nature orientation on your kits, is that just walking around and?
Yeah. So there's certain, some of them started off, they sort of developed from my paper stitch collages, so they became stitched versions of some of my paperwork. Whereas some of the other ones were just inspired because I was sat in the garden and just looking at the plants and flowers that were just growing around me and just putting little gardens together, because I just love a garden, absolutely love a garden. So a lot of the work that I used to sell was all gardens and garden inspired and nature inspired. And I sort of keep that then with all my kits, and quite a few of my workshops are like that. Whereas the freeform stuff and all the hand stitching is more of the stuff that I do online now.
Yeah, because the kits, when it comes to somebody who might be new, they all seem very approachable in terms of, you know, it's not a 10-year project. It's something fairly quick and simple, but really visually attractive.
Yeah, I mean, the kits really are more about like the hand stitching, and I'm not very prescriptive with my kits. So they're not a case of you've got to do this stitch here or that stitch there. It's somebody's personal choice. And I did that intentionally, because you don't know what somebody knows about stitching. So if you're a beginner and you've just got two or three stitches that you can do, you can create one of the pieces of work. Whereas if you're somebody that's got a massive stitch repertoire, I suppose, you can really go for it. And it, again, it's this idea of I give everybody a starting point, but you can then add and make it your own. So I think all the kits that I do, there's never two the same. Once people have stitched them, you know that your piece is just totally and utterly unique to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that.
Yeah. The freeform work, when you go to start one of those, do you have a plan, or do you just let that come out of your head as you go?
Yep, there's never a plan.
I guess that was a stupid question, because you haven't had a plan yet. So.
I don't have plans. I don't do planning. I think I have an idea. So it might be, this week I'm going to do a leaf and it's going to have lots of beads on it. So my biggest bit of the plan is that's what I've got. And then I just pull my materials out and then I just start. I just go with it. So if people have heard my videos, I don't listen to myself once I've filmed it. I've only ever done it a couple of times. My friends come over sometimes and we have a stitching day in my shed, and they've all been doing the tags and the flags and things. So they'll say at 12 o'clock, can we watch the video? Can we watch this week? So I've listened to a couple of them. I talk a load of rubbish. It's hilarious. And I make some really silly noises while I'm stitching. And basically, what you hear is what's going on in my head. So I'll have had an idea and then I'll have picked something up and I'll get really excited about it. Oh my goodness, look, we could do this. And then it all changes. And it can end up not looking like what I originally intended. But a lot of people have said that they really like the way that my videos go, because they can hear the thought process and the choices that I make and the decisions that I make with everything, because it just comes out my mouth. I also have a thing, because I'm a wobble gob.
A what?
A wobble gob. You know, like jelly wobbles.
Oh, okay.
So I'm a wobble gob. It's a name that my mum gave me when I was little. You've probably noticed by now, once I start talking, it's very hard to shut me up. So it's a little bit like jelly. When you wobble it, it doesn't stop. Yeah, I am definitely a wobble gob, which is really funny, because I sit in this room when I'm videoing everything. And basically, I am just talking to myself. And yeah, some of the times when I say things, I think, wow, that really sounds like I know what I'm talking about. And then other times it's like, well, I've totally lost my train of thought. I don't know what I just said. oh, well, let's just carry on. Or the cat comes and jumps on the table and Duncan gets in on the action as well. So, or the kids will come in and say, do you want a cup of tea? Oh, we didn't know you were filming. Sorry. And then they toddle off. So, yeah, it's just chaos, really.
But you know, I think that's the thing. I think people who are afraid to do freeform, you know, because you get to a point and you're like, okay, this is ugly, you know, and to hear an artist walk through the process where they're like, okay, yeah, this isn't working. I need to do something else.
Yeah.
It kind of helps those of us who get stuck at that point and say, well, this is ugly. I'm just going to throw it away.
Oh, no, you see, never do that. Never, ever throw anything away. Never, ever, ever. Never, ever. And if it's going to a bit where I don't like it, I keep going. I just keep going. I don't unpick anything. I just keep going.
So you don't take anything out? You don't take anything out?
Nope. 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 If it goes slightly wrong, I'll just not tell anybody and they won't know.
Or cover it with a button.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the only time I went really, really wrong, and you sort of learn things as you're going along, I was getting ready for an art show. And I needed just to finish some pieces of work. And it was quite late at night and I really should have just gone to bed. And I thought, right, I'll finish it. And it's when I was machining. So I'd got all my collages ready and I was starting to machine stitch. So I was drawing on them with my sewing machine. And I was busy where I think, God, this is really hard going. I'm not quite sure what's going on. Anyway, then I found out that I'd stitched three pieces of work together.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
And I had to unpick them to get them apart, but because it's paper, you can't save it. So I lost two of the pieces of work. So I did learn not to stitch when I'm tired, because paper, you can't get rid of the holes. They've just got holes in. And I have kept them. I haven't thrown them out. They're in a box just as a reminder not to stitch when you're tired. It's just disastrous.
Oh, no, that's a horror story. That is a horror story.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't believe it. It was like three pieces of work just... Well, no, the top one was fine, but the other two, it was like, oh, dear, that's not good going at all.
Oh, that hurts. Yeah, yeah. All right, so what was the accident that generated the collage boxes? Because I love those.
Oh, I was actually on a workshop. I was teaching my stitch collage workshop, which was all flat. And it usually gets to about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a workshop where I always find there's not very much for me to do because everybody's just getting on and I'm just waiting to see if they need some help before we do a big show and tell at the end. And I was just sat on a workshop and I was busy looking at them thinking, oh, I wonder if you could make that into a box. And it just, and again, another accident. And then I just came home and just thought, right, okay, how can you make a box? And that one just came out of me, just my mind just going, oh, what could you do next? What could you do? And that one's got quite a lot more construction to it because you've got to really think about which way around you're working so that when you put it together as a box, it does make sense. But that became a lovely workshop that I started doing because people were coming and they were bringing materials that were like memories about people or places that they'd been, and they'd bring flyers and leaflets and tickets and things. So people were making these boxes that then had stories in them. And again, that was something I hadn't thought about. I was just making boxes that just sort of fit my theme. But the idea that then they became memory boxes, and one lady that came on, she'd just been to New York. So she brought loads of things with her from New York and made a New York box. And she's contacted me since and said every time now she goes on holiday, she comes back and she still makes a box that has in everything that she had. Because we go on, I love keeping workbooks and journals and things. And one of the things that I started doing was I would go to shows and go places and take photographs and collect things and just stick them in a box and never use them again. So I started putting them in my journals and my workbooks. So I'd got everything presented. And when she came back and said that, I thought, oh, that's such a lovely idea. Because then what she does is when she's made the box, she fills it with things that she's collected and gathered. So she has all these boxes that are just like a story of where she's been, which is just amazing.
That's a great idea. That's fantastic because my husband and I camp. And so we go places and I'll pick up a piece of ephemera and I think, oh yeah, I'll put this in my notebook. And then, but I have all these collections and it's like, oh, you know.
Yeah, you've got all this stuff.
Right. And I need to do something with all this stuff.
Yeah. And we do. I think the more that you do this is like an interest, a hobby, something that you do, the more stuff you collect. Because I'm very bad at throwing things away. It tends to be if I have a clear out, whatever I clear out goes to work, and I let the kids at school use it, because I just don't like the idea of throwing things away. But I'm trying to get out of the habit now of when I go to a show, I really don't need any more fabric. I really just need to use what I've got. But I always come home with bags of stuff just because it was lovely and I couldn't resist it.
Yeah. And you know, the problem with fabric is that if you don't buy it, it can sell out and you can't buy more of it. It's like that line is gone. And that is, I've had that tragedy happen. Not that I quilt, but I have had fabric that I loved and I used every single little bit of it. And it's like, oh, I can't get any more.
I know.
So sad.
Yeah. But it gives you an excuse then to go and buy some new bits and get excited about a new bit of fabric.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. But I've got more and more, I think, this year into trying to use fabrics that aren't new. I think that's my biggest thing that I'm trying to do now, is I'm not buying new fabrics. So I love going to our local charity shops and getting clothing and cutting clothes up, because I just, my paperwork that I did initially when I first started out, everything was about a journey. So the inspiration came from a journey. A lot of the papers that I were using were all old papers that had been on a journey. And I actually did a series of work that was all based on a postcard. So I got loads of vintage 1920s postcards and did stitched work on that. And I think that's probably one of the things that underpins all of my work, is this idea of a journey. So the textiles now, I want that to have been on a journey, so that a lot of textiles, it just gets binned. And I don't like that idea, so I want to create something new.
Yeah, that's something that we are hearing. I don't know if it's just because of the people we talk to, hearing more and more about people who are going to thrift stores and getting fabric. And what we had, somebody who will buy old jewelry and then use that for beads and needlework. I don't know if it's just luck of the draw that we've talked to people who do that. But it really makes so much sense, and such a great way to add to stash without a lot of expense, and then keep things in circulation rather than having them thrown away.
Yeah, I think it's something that a lot of textile artists are becoming more and more aware of. We've just had a big, it's called the Knit and Stitch Show in Harrogate, which we take our students to. And it was one of the things that I noticed. I think just about every exhibition that we were looking at, people were upcycling and recycling and reusing. And I think it's good. I think being more, I suppose it's ethically, I think that's the right word, aware, rather than just creating new stuff, is stopping things, I suppose, going to landfill and reusing it and giving it new life. Because there's a lot of old textiles that I use that I get from the charity shops here in Brighouse. And the tablecloths might have a tea stain on them, but they're just going to throw them out because they're not going to sell them. And I just think, just using that, because you've no idea where it's come from, but it looks like it's been loved and really well used. And I love the idea of somebody else's story becoming part of my work, and then it's not going to get thrown away because the piece of work then becomes something new. And then it moves forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of I think people are looking at it as, you know, because I go to estate sales and they literally say, if you like this, you know, we'll give you a bag of it, because at the end of this will all be in the dumpster.
Yeah.
We cannot sell it. And it's beautiful old linens. Yeah. You like to have a tea stain. They have something on it. Some of them have holes, which is the other thing we like. Got a little tear in them there, and then you cut them up and you dye them, which is what I like to do.
Yeah.
And then put them in your art. There's just something about it.
Yeah. And the fabrics are just beautiful because they've been washed. They're soft and they're absolutely gorgeous to stitch into. So that's one of the things that I'm absolutely loving with my work at the moment as well.
Yeah, it's interesting to see kind of things kind of come full cycle, because I was having a conversation with I don't know if it was you, Beth, or somebody else here just recently about our throwaway society and how, you know, back in the Georgian periods and those times, you know, they made clothes to last and get handed down.
Yeah.
And not wasted. And, you know, we buy a shirt and it gets a little worn. We just toss it. And
yeah.
And so to see this, you know, let's find ways to reuse this instead of just throwing it away is almost a full circle thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a few years ago I came across borrow and the idea of mend and stitch on the top of and slow stitching. And that's something I absolutely love. I think it's so good for your mental health. I think, I just think it's amazing just being able to sit and stitch and just put something of yourself through with the needle and thread in the piece of work that you're doing. Even if all you're doing is just doing a running stitch on something. I've ended up repairing loads of my clothes. I have my favourite pair of jeans that got holes in it and I couldn't bear to get rid of them because they're so comfortable. So whenever I get a new hole, I just patch it and stitch over it and then patch it. I think there's going to be more patch than jeans eventually.
right.
But, I just love it. Stitch just rules. It rules everything.
And that's so true about a pair of jeans. When you just get them broken in and they get a hole in them, it's like, no, not that.
No, you just need to stitch over them. It's fine. Loads of my clothes, if I get a little stain on that won't wash out, I just put a patch on it and stitch on it. I sort of wear my work now.
Yep. Why not?
Yeah. Why not?
Two other things, and we're going to run out of time and too many things to talk about. Two other things that I wanted to learn about, and I'm sure Beth has some things. The hand dashery and the woodwork, because I'm a sucker for good woodwork, and that looks like some beautiful stuff. And then the other thing appeals to me greatly is the project half done days. What are those about?
Oh, okie doke. So I suppose this goes right back to me doing original workshops and stuff like that. I was a little bit of a sucker for starting things and never finishing them. So the PhD days, which over here, a PhD is a qualification like a degree. So it's one of the things I always talk about when I give my talks is the fact that I'm very qualified. I have a lot of PhDs. I have many, many projects half done. I think people call them UFOs or bag projects or something.
Right.
And the PhD days are just a day in my shed where people can just come and they can sit and work along everybody else that just has things to get finished. And I think going somewhere and taking a project and thinking, right, I'm going to finish this today, it's just amazing at the end of it, especially when people have finished things. So I have people that come to the shed, but we get people that join online as well. So I have a big TV screen in the shed. So I do Zoom as well. So people can work at home, but still feel like they're part of a group that's stitching. So the PhD days are just brilliant. It's amazing what people come. So some people come and they bring the projects that they've done with me, or it might have been a workshop that they've done that they've not quite finished things and they just need the space to come and do it. Because I think when you're working at home, you don't always have a dedicated space to sit and stitch. And it's a pain to have to get it out and put it away and things. Whereas if you can put it all in a bag, take it somewhere and just sit and do it, you're more likely to get it finished. I really love the PhD days. They're absolutely fantastic.
Oh, that's great fun. Plus, there's got to be a finish happens every now and then, and there's big excitement for everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. I keep saying, because I watch, is it Selling Sunset that's in the US? And when they're selling a house, they have a big bell and they ring a bell. And one of the things I want to do next year in the shed is get a bell so that when somebody's finished a project, they can ring the bell. So it's like a bit of a celebration. It's like, woo, I've actually finished something. It's amazing. But the haberdashery, that all came about because I was doing all my kits and people were asking about threads. So I started selling threads as well. So the haberdashery obviously is a play on words of haberdashery. It's got my name in it again. So that's how that came out. It was funny because I was busy doing things on my website and I just got some new threads that had come in and needles and scissors and things like that. And I was busy putting them on my website and I just suddenly started giggling away to myself. And Robert said, "What are you giggling at?" I said, "I've just come up with the name haberdashery." and he didn't get it at all. But everybody that stitches did. They know it's so, a play on the words.
I got to do a show. We got to do a show with Robert because he's got to have stories to tell for 2 hours. Oh,
he, yes, he does.
No, you're speaking to him. But actually, he's where the woodwork comes in. So all the cases for my pin cushions, he makes those. So he started, he did, when, I think, was it in lockdown? He loves woodwork. And he loves working with plywood because of the lines in it. And he started making like breadboards and sharing platters, and he was selling them in a local shop in Brighouse. And I absolutely loved them. And I thought, oh, could you do me some and make me little cases for pin cushions? So he actually does all the woodwork for the pin cushions, and then I sit and do all the needle felting that's inside them. So actually the woodwork bit is him. So he's sort of, even there, he's got a little bit of a foot in my business, bless him.
Well, and so you're still doing then the woolwork, the needle felting.
Yeah, so he does all the cases, and then I sit on an evening and needle felt all the bits that go in. He did have a go at doing the needle felting, but when I did quality control, it just wasn't quite good enough. So he's not allowed to do that bit. He can do the quality control on the woodwork, and I will do the felt making. That's my.
That's exchange great. Had to be special.
It was good. Yeah, because we were sat one evening and he kept coming and saying, "Is this good enough?" I'm like, no. And he's like, "Oh my goodness, how much more have I got to keep going?" And he just went, "Oh, I can't do this. You can do that bit." And I'm like, "That's fine. I'll sit and do those."
Well, and I wanted to ask you about your textile wanderings books 1 and 2.
Okay.
Yeah, I looked at those and I thought, what a great idea.
Yeah, the first one, that came out of, I was chatting to a friend on a workshop, and she was talking about how she loves books, but she wants to sort of combine her work with a book. And I thought, oh, that's quite a nice idea. And because all my work was, I always call it, it's my textile wanderings. I go off for a wander and then come back with loads of inspiration. And I thought it'd be quite nice to actually do that in a book. So the very first book is about wandering and pondering and thinking. So the book was always set up that you could write in it and do little bits of textiles and stick them in and sort of build up your own ideas for your work. And if you've been out and taken photographs, because everything's digital now, we don't tend to print out photos. So the book encourages you to print pictures out and then look at how that could evolve into your textiles. So that was the very first book. The second one is For the Love of Stitch. That one is about textile projects. So that actually you create little mini quilts as you go through. So that sort of came out of the lockdown work that I did and just wanting prompts to make little pieces of work. So that one, at the end of it, you end up with, I don't know if it's 8 or 10 little quilts, and then you can put them together as a book or you could put them together as a block. So it's like the first one's about gaining ideas and stuff, and the second one was about actually making something and just having those little prompts to sort of inspire you into making a piece of work.
Well, and I watched your video about Textile Wanderings 1, and you showed, you know, like blank pages, but you also showed where you put like a little collage in. And I just thought, that's what a great idea, because I have a family and we all love books. We're book lovers. But to add your own touch into a book, I don't know. I just love that idea. I thought that was great.
Yeah, I just wanted to do something. So it's just another way of sharing what I do, and people then can just work through the projects as and when they want. And I'm busy just beginning to start planning the third book, which is going to be about, that's For the Love of Stitch. It is about stitching and hand stitching techniques. So it's going right back to basics, the next one.
And are you using Blurb for that one too?
Yes. Yeah. So it's a self-publishing website. So it's great because you've got total control of what you're doing. Because I had feedback from people that have had books published by big publishing houses and stuff. And the similar complaint that most people were saying was you lose that creativity and that overall say of how it's going to look. And I'm a little bit of a control freak. I didn't want to hand that over. So I love making the books myself and just putting them together, because I just feel like it's a bit more of me, because it's the way that I present things and the way that I put things together. So I just felt like I was happier that people were buying a book that was me rather than somebody else.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend that used Blurb. She always wanted to write a book, and that's the website she used to make her book.
So, yeah. It is great. It is great.
All right. So what's next for you? We got new kits coming out, new classes.
Next year, oh blimey, I've got new projects coming out. So on my Ko-fi page, we are doing 52 stitches, and the stitching hour is going to be, it's a big quilt piece that we're going to do. I've got a new book that I'm going to be writing next year that will probably come out right at the very end of the year. I'm in the middle of designing new embroidery templates based on the four seasons. I've got workshops that I'm running. I get guest tutors that come to the shed as well. So I've got a brand new program for next year, and I'm getting out and about. So I know I'm up into Scotland twice next year. I'm teaching at a summer school. Luckily this year I've gone down to 2 days a week at work, so I've got more time to stitch. So I'm actually able to do even more stuff, which is just great.
And I'm actually you're boring, Anne. You're really boring.
I'm really boring. The bit I'm looking forward to, because I'm actually getting my head around the fact that I'm not at work all the time, is I'm actually next year going to set time aside just for me to do some work for me, not for anybody else, not mm-hmm. to sell or to share or anything, just like a little bit of a guilty pleasure. So I'll be setting myself a bit of a project, I think, next year, which no doubt will turn into something else. But hey ho, you know, you've got to have something to keep you busy and keep you out of trouble.
Yeah, that's a mindset that I think we need to take a look at these days. If you do it, there's no law that says you have to put it on the internet.
No, not at all. I mean, right. I probably will put it on the internet because I just like sharing it. But that's where For the Love of Stitch came out this last year, is I got a bit fed up of whenever you were making something, people were asking you what you're doing, what you're making it for, what is it going to be? And it's like, it doesn't have to be anything. It can just be because you enjoy stitching. Why has it got to be for something? Mm-hmm. I just think it can just be because you want to sit and stitch.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to remember that. We really do.
Totally.
And my friends and I, that's what we're going to be doing in 2023. We are going to try something called the Daily Stitching 365, where we just, each of us in our own way, is going to explore stitch. And we'll post it on the internet mainly to keep each other accountable.
Yeah.
But that's the only reason. It's just to keep each other accountable.
There's an artist called Shelley Rhodes who I've done her online workshop this last year, and on Instagram, that's what she does. She posts every day a little bit of drawing every single day, just be 10, 15 minutes of your life. But just to do that I think it's just good for you. And it gives you a bit of a focus because you can look back and you can see, wow, just generated, because I'm sat here at my desk and I've got all the flags in front of me, and it's like it's 52 weeks of my life all in front of me, and they're all different, and there's memories and little stories behind them all. And I just think having that as your personal diary and a journey of what you've done is, it's so precious.
Yep. All right, we gotta quit, darn it. There's more questions. You gotta come back and do another show, Anne, but we gotta quit now.
Okay.
Because there's more stuff to talk about. All right. That was so much fun, Anne. Thanks for making the time for us and sharing your accidental life of needlework.
It can make your life very rich.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Anne, and thanks to everyone for listening.